It's Thursday, May 12th, 2016, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, a show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 145. Smell you later. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour 11 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that wants to be the very best. My name is Jeremy.
I evolve using the leaf stone. I'm Tyler.
You evolve using a leaf stone? Crap, he's a blue grass type. My name's Zach.
Tyler is definitely a really weird type, I know. I'm married to him. I'm Alex.
I'm sorry.
I'm not.
That's my Pokemon cry.
Okay, I might be a little sorry.
Regretting your decisions in life?
Hopefully not putting you to sleep and eating your dreams. It's Cody.
This week, we're not doing Pokemon Snap. We're not doing Pokemon Pinball. We're not doing Pokemon Puzzle League. We are doing Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow.
Finally, because Nintendo finally released the original versions.
We're doing Pokemon Primary Colors.
I don't think any of us actually played Yellow.
I mean, recently.
I own two copies.
And
so,
I played one of Jeremy's copies.
In this case, I'd actually assumed that we were counting Yellow as its own thing. I didn't realize we were counting it as part of Gen 1, which it totally freaking is, but...
And this way we can call it Pokemon Ruby and name it after that show I hate.
Hey, I've played Yellow as recently as I've played Red or Blue.
So,
which is
15 years ago?
Yeah, about. You know, it's as is tradition on the podcast, Alex is not here having played the game. She's here with nostalgia.
All right, so we're going to try to quickly run through what we've been playing this week and then get to Pokemon. Alex, anything to report?
Nope, still lots of Animal Crossing.
All right, Tyler, I know you've been playing every video game and I want to talk to you about all of them. And it's going to be 30 minutes and I'm going to be like, crap, we need to talk about Pokemon. So Tyler, what have you been playing?
Okay, so really quickly, I finished Bravely Default. This actually happened a while ago and I just kind of forgot about it because it's been so long since we recorded.
And you got the Grant Morrison ending with the alternate planets and praying to you.
Oh yeah,
I completely...
So I didn't actually have that many people on my friends list at the end of this, so I kept having BuddyBot sacrifice to their planet for me. Ed was like all ninjas or something like that on his side. And
what
like,
was I? I'm curious.
I didn't get you, because It's on the same cartridge.
Oh, yeah, huh. Okay.
I mean, it was pretty much exactly the ending I expected, although the obviously added after-the-fact thing where Tiz is, like, in a rehabilitation chamber as a teaser for Bravely Default 2 was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I just...
But you get to meet a Ballbuster, and that's every guy's dream, right?
Yeah, a Ballbuster. I actually, for the first time, saw the character assets for Bravely Default 2 when I went to go download the demo last night, and man, they just, like, were like, you know what? Tiz had a lame character design. He needs to be more of an anti-hero for this one, so that was kind of a weird decision. So yeah, Bravely Default, pretty good game. It took way too long to get to the end. I'm glad they put in the, like, grind mechanic. I did fight the every boss in a row fight.
Did you do the super secret secret super dungeon?
Oh, yeah, Dimensions Hasp. That wasn't even...
Did you get to the secret boss that you have to walk through a wall to fight?
Oh, yeah, he raped my ass multiple times and I gave up.
So I beat him, but it took 30 years.
No, I feel like if I had been using stillness more tactically, I probably could have done it, but like, I just want to be done with the game.
Fair enough. Definitely so. How I felt. Great game. God, do I want to be done with this. This game turns me into Zach.
So I'm hoping they learned some lessons from that for Bravely Default 2.
Achievement unlocked. Became Zach. Damn
yeah.
Straight.
So actually, just before recording tonight, I played the Payday 2 new skills beta. I actually went Infamous recently, though, so I wasn't able to play around with it a whole lot because I don't have that many skill points. But it is way cooler. It looks better. There are some bugs with it, which is unsurprising. I like the things they did with it. I'm already a fully functional ghost with fully upgraded drills, and I'm only level, like, 30 or something. Don't know what I'm going to put all my other skill points into.
Wow!
Well, because Ghost now has, like, the sneaky part is just a third of the tree. And I just upgraded all the sneaky things and upgraded all the drilling and placing shape charges and nonsense. And
that's in Ghost?
No, that's an Enforcer or Technician.
Technician.
It's called Breacher now.
Cool.
And now I have 13 other possible trees to go up, and I'm not sure which ones I want to go up. So that's actually pretty cool. I like what they're doing with the beta, but it's definitely still in beta. Played a lot of Splatoon recently for the first time ever. I immediately dropped to A+ rank because it's been a while. Apparently people have gotten better in my absence. Then I got better and going back up to S rank, so that was fun. No particularly great stories. I had a squid party, though, on Piranha Pit, which is like a level with a bunch of treadmills. A squid party in Splatoon, for everyone who is not me, is when you also decide to say, screw turf war, let's all go hang out in like a barbecue or something and like flop around in squid form together and constantly shout at each other.
So it's slash outside... dance in front of the auction.
Yes, exactly.
It's dance at Baron.
Except it's on a time limit, so you know, the most time you ever have to do it is like, I think, 2 minutes.
Well, the dance off at Baron usually involves one side going, now! And massacring the other one.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else particularly relevant. 20XX, fantastic game. Play more of it. Metal Gear!
Yeah, you want to talk Metal Gear? Because I want to talk to you about Metal Gear.
Metal Gear, I visited the Devil's House.
It's cool.
Well, okay, so I saw, like, they had headphones, iPod-style headphones, which I didn't think existed in the 80s.
Oh, you know what else didn't exist in the 80s?
Like, half of this scrap? They all have headphones in their throats. I'm like, huh, that's really weird. I wonder what the purpose of that is. And they're like, they don't have English on them, boss. I'm like, oh, I see exactly what's going on. They're trying to make English the only language through parasites that infect people and kill them. And then, like, two missions later, they're like, boss, they're trying to infect people with parasites that only kill people speaking certain languages and kill them. I'm like, yep. That sure is a Metal Gear thing.
There's actually a really crappy movie from the early 90s called Pontypool.
Pontypool?
Oh, that's a pretty good movie.
It's a zombie movie that follows the same kind of logic where certain words and...
Yeah, the zombie virus is basically transferred by certain words.
Huh.
And so he has to...
So they must become taboo?
He basically has to change the meaning of words to get them to... not infect people any longer.
That's neat.
And he's a radio DJ.
Oh, okay. So he has, like, some amount of power to do this?
I mean, he mostly fails, but it's a zombie movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Devil's House is pretty cool. I got, like, Skullface just showing up there, and that boss battle after, how did that boss battle treat you?
Oh, man.
He got his butt kicked so many times.
It was only like 3 times, and then I called him a water pistol.
I was going to say, did you try the water pistol? And then Ocelot go, Snake, I don't think that's going to work.
Actually, what I ended up doing is after the third time, on like the second try, I'm like, oh, there's a water tower here. So I put C4 around all the legs, expecting that to blow. You only need one.
And the first time I did, I blew up the water tower just as he escaped the blast radius of the water tower.
I, like, lured him over to me, used the water tower to block his shots, blew up the water tower on him, and called down the chopper, but the chopper took too long to get there, so he just shot the chopper out of there. I'm like, screw it, I'm just restarting. Tried it again, did it better that time, and, like, called the chopper in, waited for him to get to the water tower, blew it up, and then right as he was doused, the chopper showed up. I'm like, yeah, that's much better timing. And then it left.
I shot him into the pool.
Oh,
it's a longer-term solution. The best solutions are you can shoot him off the map.
Oh, really? Over that cliff there?
You can also, it's really hard, you can extract him.
Hey, didn't you tell me that you did that, or at least saw someone do it?
I just saw it, and Miller is like, Snake, what are you doing? And, you know, being Miller. And also, it's like, yeah, let's see what who this guy is and what he's made of. Yeah, and then Miller's like, thank God he cut the parachute strings before we could find him.
I mean, you can, like, keep him in a tank of water or something, come on.
Well, do you really have to go get him? Just leave him floating around up there. Yeah. He's floating, extracted with a parachute. He's just like, crap, I'm stuck up here.
One of the most cognitively dissonant games or things about that game to me is when you're extracting prisoners, they enjoy the ride on the Fulton extraction device, which is like death balloons. And I never understood that because, like, you don't tell them what's going on. They just get sucked up into the air and they're like, woohoo!
They just stapled a balloon to their back.
They're constantly commenting about, oh, the, you know, Fulton extraction puts huge stresses on the body, so we can't extract kids, and, you know, this statistically important character is too wounded to do Fulton extract him.
So you find these, like...
malnourished prisoners who've been subjected to months of torture. You strap weather balloons to their back and rocket launch them into the
And they're
stress.
Like, woohoo! And like, no, you should be, Whee! Like, screaming or dying.
It's
one
just
or the other.
Product or testing. You can't test it on valuable resources.
That is true. Actually, I just unlocked the plus children enhancement for the Fulton extraction device. Now I can extract children.
You don't have to carry them to the helicopter now?
And you know how I unlocked that? I beat out of a kid.
So now there's
gotta
no
have
longer
a test
a,
subject.
You must be this tall to be Fulton extracted.
Yeah, it turns out the missing ingredient was a conch shell.
Oh, God, the Lord of the Flies references in that game.
It was
game.
So right. Lord of
Don't
the Flies.
Don't worry, right before that plotline wraps up, the game decides to stop.
I kind of figured that, like...
Got right on the nose.
Well, I, like, went up and, like, huh, there are a bunch of kids being terrible to each other and also kind of crazy. And I walk up and, like, oh.
A pig's head on a stake.
Yeah, he has
Subtle.
A pig head on a stake in front of him, and he's wearing a concho. I'm like, oh, Hideo Kojima, you too, Red Lord of the Flies, then.
Not Pigly 3.
Was that more or less on the nose, did you think, than the English language is a virus?
Oh, that was
metaphor.
Way more on the nose.
Yeah, no, the English, that was at least a little subtle, but only a little. It's like actually kind of the anti-virus. It's the only thing that's not a virus.
Well, the game keeps going.
Okay, that's true.
What level are you currently at?
The last one I did is the one where you like, actually justifies taking all explosive weapons and battle armor, where you're just like, you crash land and there are just skulls
everywhere. That one is
everywhere.
Fun.
It is actually a lot of fun. Well, I went into it.
That's like the first level that ends on a to be continued.
Yep.
And you start a level, crash in a helicopter, like, well, I need more guns. Why didn't I not bring more guns?
Yeah, I went in with rubber bullets and the skulls were like, ha ha ha, rubber bullets.
Okay, you know the level I was talking about Tyler dying on, like, infinity times?
Yeah, that one.
This
yeah,
is actually
I died
the one
on quite
I meant.
A, yeah, I died on that one quite a bit, too.
He died, and then he died, and then he died. He swapped out his weapons, and he died, and he died.
I ended up using D-Walker.
Oh, yeah, I haven't developed it much, so it's got, like, a tranquilizer gun.
And I was like, hey, Quiet, come help me shoot these guys,
I'm like,
please.
Quiet, bring a real rifle this time.
And she's all like,
Humming well, intensifies.
You can have her bring a trank rifle, you just have to find all the people she tranks and slit their throats before they get back up.
No, well, they're skulls, though.
Yeah, they have, like, rock coating.
You can extract them, though.
I was not able to on this. Like, I shot them down.
You might
then...
need to upgrade the Fulton more, because I know you get, like, parasite armor, but you need to extract skulls to fuel it.
Yeah, no,
it
I got the armor
that...
right after that mission.
Mm-hmm, because that mission, they're like, hey, you need to extract skulls so we can just grab, you know, develop parasite armor.
Yeah, and I actually went and killed all the, totally not quiet clones on that level with the snipers, and their bodies were everywhere. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I can't extract them, though, because there's too much foliage ahead or above me. So I might be able to go back and redo the airport level and take them out that way. So,
all right. Anything else, Tyler?
Nope. I mean, Metal Gear's a lot of fun. I just, like, I can't play a whole lot of it at a time. So one of these days I'll finish it. Although I did find Hyper Light Drifter. I want to play it really a lot.
Play that because I don't want to play it, but I want to be told stories about it.
Fair enough.
Zach, what have you been playing?
Well, League of Legends had their Earth mode come back, so I played a little bit of that. Actually, I played a lot of that. Surprisingly, for a game I don't like very, or a game mode I don't like very much.
Didn't you find some super broken champion on it?
I played Vigor.
Oh yeah, that was it.
So it's like I'm building full tank on a champion who's not supposed to be built full tank because he has an ability that lets him stack up damage. Every time he kills a minion with his Q ability, he gets an AP, or point of ability power.
Oh wow!
And
okay.
In Earth with no cooldowns, you just spam that. At one point, I had like 1,000 something ability power, and one of the enemy players was like, "What the heck? I don't have any ability power." Because his ultimate actually scales off 80% of his target's ability power. And he goes, I don't even have any of this. And one of my teammates goes, he's got 22 kills. What do you want? So that was actually kind of fun. Me and Kevin made a enemy player kind of rage at us. Because I was playing Graves.
Rage against the Kevin.
And he was playing Taric. And he used his you can no longer take damage ability. Right before the enemy Zed, who was basically the most broken champion in Earth.
Even more broken than the guy who just gains attack by playing the game.
Vigor has no movement.
Okay.
Abilities and can't dash a certain number of units every 2 seconds.
Well, neither can I.
No, but Zed can. And does loads of damage. But he used his ability that makes no one take damage in this radius. And then the Zed player tried to kill me, so I took no damage. And he was wondering, did my ultimate even work against you? And I'm like, yeah, but the Taric ult made me invincible. You did no damage, so your ult didn't do any damage. And he's like, that's such a stupid champion. Me and Kevin both just started laughing, like, dude, pot, kettle. That game ended in 11 minutes. We
wow.
Absolutely crushed.
Jeez. That's just mean.
Oh, yeah. We demolished them. It was fantastic.
That's like a decent game of StarCraft too.
And today, League announced, well, they kind of like semi-announced, their next champion, they put up a short story that had them basically starring in it. People keep calling it a Toph, and I have no idea what that is.
You mean the character from Avatar?
T-O-P-H?
Yeah.
It's a blind earth-moving dude?
I don't think she's blind, but she's got earth-based powers.
She's blind.
I've seen like 3 episodes of Avatar, and I know that Toph is blind.
No, I meant this League of Legends champion.
Oh,
she doesn't seem to be blind.
Is she a crotchety old woman?
No.
Is she a crotchety young woman?
No. She's Shireeman.
So, Toph's thing is that she's blind and has been pampered by her parents all her life because of it, and she really resents it. Turns out she's also the most gifted earthbender to have been born in many generations.
And she has tremor sense.
Yeah, she basically has, like,
Daredevil vision.
Yeah, Daredevil vision. And also, she's so good at earthbending, she can, in fact, metal bend.
Well, for this champion, the only thing we know so far is that she knows Yasuo, and she probably has a knockup in her kit.
I don't know what that is. She gets people pregnant?
I was going to say, I know what that is, and I was thinking the exact same thing.
No, her has a certain crowd control ability that pops people up into the air.
Okay.
I really prefer to think that she can demand child support on demand.
Oh, gosh, she's draining my gold.
So, Zach, have you been playing anything else?
I keep starting XCOM, but then reminding myself that they're actually going to add some more, like, DLC to that game.
So you should just wait until they do it?
That's
so you're not burned out.
So far, yeah. And I actually played a few rounds of Dead or Alive 5, which is...
Oh, wow. That's been a while.
I'm really excited to get started on Overwatch.
Yeah.
But I also want to play a couple of my other games, but I haven't actually been playing the other games. But Dead or Alive 5 is still good. XCOM 2, still really good. League, still good.
Rad Slimes, they're
but,
great.
But, not really. Cody, you're still here.
I am still here.
What have you been playing?
I have been playing Monster Rancher 2 on the original PlayStation.
Oh, wow, that is the old game.
That is a good game. I think Monster Rancher 4 on PS2 is slightly better, but Monster Rancher 2 is still
4 is amazing. Yeah. I love 4.
Which one was it that you could put CDs into the game?
All of them.
That's all of them. That's Monster Hunter's
that's
thing.
Okay. Monster
except
Rancher,
the ones
Rancher.
On the DS, and which sucked because you could not put CDs in it.
The
had the drawing mechanic, and you could just draw random
well,
shapes.
There was one on the Game Boy which operated off of...
It was a word-based algorithm.
But that one was also super easy to break.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just look up the codes.
No, on it was a matter of training on that one. It was super easy to break it because you could just max out the strength to like 999, which was easy in that one, and then one-shot everybody.
It depends on the type of monster you had, but typically that was a decent strategy. Because if you were playing like a pixie or the stupid one-eyed weird-looking guy, you wanted to max intelligence because it was their damage base.
Wazo! Anything else?
Nope.
Oh, that's appropriate for this week. I've been playing more Stardew Valley. I've got 60 hours in it. And
wow.
It's one of those things where I'm ready for the game to be over. I have so much money that making more money doesn't feel good, and I make ridiculous amounts of money every day.
Is go spend it on like... hookers and blow.
Yes. Is there an actual ending to that game?
Like Harvest Moon 64, every 2 years, the ghost of your grandpa comes and tells you you're a horrible farmer and rates you. So I'm just trying to get through my first 2 years.
So how fast do the days go by for that then? Because in Harvest
Slowly.
Moon, you could go through a day in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's probably like 20. 20 seems like too much, but 10 to 15.
They're definitely longer than the original Harvest Moon.
Way longer. And then the only other thing I've been playing is Star Fox Zero. And I do not remember a thing I've had more buyer's remorse about. So Star Fox Zero, I don't really know where to begin. I think the big thing is, last week we were talking about how great all the levels in Star Fox 64 are.
Yeah, did anywhere close to it in Zero?
There's one part of a level I remember where there's a ship with these giant cannons on it that's protected by a force field. So you have to wait for General Pepper's ships to, like, bait the giant laser and then fly in through the little hole.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
It is. That I don't remember what level it's on, though. Or because there are so many space levels where you're fighting capital ships. The bosses don't really interact with you. All of the bonus levels, all your allies just aren't there, so they don't talk to you.
Awesome.
Kind of there's only 2 paths through the story game, and then the rest are kind of spin-off missions. There is actually their take on the asteroid field. You have to escort the Great Fox and like destroy the asteroids in front of it. So that's kind of cool. That's the only level where it feels like someone had a cool idea and made a level, though.
Nobody likes escort missions.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Is it's the most interesting level is an escort mission.
And
I don't hate the controls nearly as much as some people. But I feel like the game is just long enough for you to get used to the controls, and then it's over.
That's a bit of a shame, but if it's a game designed around replayability and high score like Star Fox 64 was, that's acceptable.
Except for the levels are boring and you don't want to replay them.
That's a That's a
it does have
problem,
a bunch of like replayable challenges, like Star Wolf randomly showing up on levels and stuff, but they're not very interesting. And like, I didn't realize Platinum Games worked on this game. It doesn't feel like it though, because the combat system could not be more like Star Fox 64. The only thing they've really added is like enemy weaknesses.
Platinum?
Yeah, they make Bayonetta,
which is actually
Wonderful 101,
good game. Also
Metal Gear
good
Rising
game.
Revengeance, that cool shoot 'em up game I can't think of the name of.
Okay.
So some credentials they have.
Yeah. Yeah, the only real new thing is like certain enemies will have weak spots that you need to target. The main like crux of the controls is the TV screen has the Star Fox 64 view, and the gamepad has the cockpit view, which is a lot more accurate for aiming.
That's actually kind of a cool way to go about using that screen.
It takes so long to get used to. And Nintendo really seems like they're trying to make you try to look between both screens, which is fine. That's the challenge of the game. But it makes for a lot of unsatisfying deaths while you're learning the system. Which is why so many people really hate the controls.
That's the problem, is if you're forcing the players to look between two screens, the challenge then isn't in the game. It's in your controls, and that's an inherent flaw. I've said it on every N64 game we've played.
I don't think it's an inherent flaw, because that kind of is the game, is managing your attention between two screens. But there are a lot of levels where if the camera angle was just slightly different, it would be a lot better. And, like I said, you get used to it just as the game is ending, which sucks. But you know what you don't get used to right as the game is ending, and what definitely doesn't suck?
Rock, paper, scissors?
How awesome your freaking Gyarados is?
Yeah, that's... Your Gyarados isn't as cool as my Gyarados, though.
I probably didn't have a Gyarados.
Were there shinies in the first one?
No, there weren't. Also, fun fact about Gyarados, his English name was going to be Skullkraken, but that won't fit.
Why not?
It doesn't fit.
Fit in the text. Yeah,
they don't have enough characters.
That's awesome, Skullkraken.
It would have been.
Magikarp evolved to the Skullkraken.
I lament the fact that this game could not be in the blue tinted color version that I played as a kid.
No, yeah. But on the 3DS you could make it that ugly pea soup green.
Oh boy.
I'd rather play in black and white than pea soup green.
So on the off chance you are made out of rocks and thus live under one, Pokemon is like a biopunk setting. Basically, it's a world where all animals are magical creatures called Pokemon.
There's actually a trope on TV Tropes named after this called Pokemon World, where everyone's obsessed with the magical creatures, and that's all they do all the time.
Pokemon Flintstones would actually work in that.
Yeah, it would, actually.
I mean, Lucha Underground works on that in that. It's just everyone is obsessed with wrestling. So Pokemon is about all these little creatures. Originally, there were 151, and since we're playing the original games, that's how many there were. They have different mystical powers, like shooting water, or fire, or psychic powers.
Or bugs, just being a bug.
Or making you buy a lot of trading cards.
The best mystic power of all for the producer.
The way this translates into game as a typical JRPG, but instead of assembling a party, you assemble a group of Pokemon.
A hardened group of brawling veterans, which are adorable.
Yeah. Yes, I want to talk about the appeal of Pokemon a bit before we move on, though, because giving 150 is a really good number, I think, because that's enough that a kid can dedicate themselves and memorize. It's enough for a lot of variety, and it's enough to make them appeal for different reasons.
I think my brother had the first 150 Pokemon memorized.
I still do.
I super did. You remember the TV show they did, Who's That Pokemon? I always knew who that Pokemon was.
I probably had the first, like, hundred some odd.
When I was a kid, this came on at, like, 6 o'clock.
So you actually got up in the morning, like
no,
me?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you were a bitch and taped it. Now I remember.
No.
We became friends because you had an episode taped, and I was like, I want to be friends with this guy.
That was part of it.
That's beginning a long stream of poor life decisions.
No, he's right. My dad, a couple times, got me and my brother awake. Took us with him on his paper route so we would be awake for the Pokemon to come on.
That's actually kind of awesome.
You can tell these came out of Japan because they're not all made of knives and trying to be badass. Some of them are cute and might actually appeal to girls. Alex, can you speak to that at all?
Well, that's the thing. I was actually literally about to interject that this is one of the few games that you guys have played on the podcast that I've done more than just watch. I mean, I know last week was Star Fox, which I watched the crap out of, but I never actually played Star Fox. It was beyond my patience as an uncoordinated, lousy gamer. Pokemon was really not. I played huge amounts of Pokemon. I think I had Blue and my brother had Red. Yellow entered the house later and went through the washing machine at one point. But even after that, as a college kid, I ended up with Platinum.
Yeah, I bought you Platinum.
Yeah,
and you
Tyler bought
most
me Platinum. So Pokemon is this ridiculously wide appeal game.
What's your favorite Pokemon, Alex?
Ninetales.
So in addition to cute things like Ninetales, you have badass dragons like Charizard and Frieza like Mewtwo.
Our friend Ryan really likes Golduck.
Yeah, you have silly things like Wobbuffet and Golduck. Wobbuffet isn't in this one.
Golduck's a badass.
The thing that I find kind of funny, throughout all the games, Pikachu and Raichu went on a diet from these.
Oh, yeah. All the Pokemon. The art style from Pokemon dramatically changes because they were all drawn by one guy. Because this is a game that started with six people who ran a magazine being like, let's make a cool game. But yeah,
I really like collecting bugs as a kid. Let's make a game about that.
Jeremy Parrish, who is one of my favorite video game reviewers, refers to it as Fat Pikachu. He's always sad that Fat Pikachu isn't around anymore.
Yeah, because Fat Pikachu was even originally on the first release trading cards.
Yep, I actually have one of those. It knows Growl and Thundershock.
I have the Surfing Pikachu.
Oh, yep, that's also good. There's also Flying Pikachu.
PSA, there will be lots of Pokemon noises generated by Alex.
So as Alex alluded to, this is not a game that requires much reflex, because it is a JRPG.
Really? You need is the ability to read and do basic math.
Crap! Yep. It's got sort of your standard RPG mechanics, except for that instead of having a default attack command, you just have four abilities, and instead of having mana, each ability has a certain number of times it can be used between being healed, which is a lot more friendly than a Final Fantasy.
Does it implement struggle in this?
Yeah. Yes. If you're out of uses for all your moves, you have a struggle attack.
The first time I ever really played or like pitted one of my teams against another person's team in this game is we both had basically the exact same team, including Zapdos, Blastoise, and Mewtwo. And it ended up being the struggling fight of the Mewtwos, who both knew Mimic for no apparent reason. So we both ran out of moves, none of us managed to mimic self-destruct, and we struggled each other to death. I won barely.
What really sets it apart from other RPGs is every attack has a type, and Final Fantasy had long had water enemies that were weak to bolt, and enemies that were weak to ice and such, but in this game, every Pokemon has one of 15 types.
Yeah, clearly they're a fan of Rock, Paper, Scissors, Spock. Yes.
Was it 15 even in first gen?
Yeah, it's 15 in the original.
They only added three types, Dark, Steel, and Fairy.
I can't believe it's that many.
Yeah, it was a little broken at first because Psychic didn't really have a weakness.
Part of that was due to a glitch, although Ghost still wouldn't have been that effective against it. Even.
There are no good Ghost moves. There's a Lick.
And
what are you going to do with Lick?
Bug had no good attacks.
Nobody liked Bug type.
It's
because
bad.
Bug type doesn't have any really good moves in Gen 1. They get a couple later, but they have like Leech Life.
I'm a freaking Caterpillar.
The highest base damage Bug move is Twin Needle, and Beedrill
that's the one I was thinking of.
Is the only Pokemon that learns it.
And nobody likes Beedrill because they all want
Jolteon.
Jolteon
learns Pin Missile, not Twin Needle.
You're right.
Pin Missile ends up doing more damage because it can strike five times.
But Pin Missile is not bug type, is it?
Yeah, it is.
I thought it wasn't.
Just the way the stats work out, Jolteon is pretty much always better off using Thunderbolt against Psychics.
Yep.
Each Pokemon has a type. You get a bonus to moves if you use a move
same
type as you.
Same type attack bonus, or stab.
But the big thing is using attacks that are super effective. Because if you, use water on fire type Pokemon,
it does
double damage.
And that's really what the game is more complicated rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah,
well, the thing is, all of them make a good deal of sense. Like, you just look at it, the only ones that are kind of weird is psychic. Because fighting is strong against rock, because,
you punch rocks.
You break, the karate master's breaking bricks and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if you actually think about it,
it's
makes
very
sense.
Japanese.
It's a thing where it's not intuitive, but once you know it, it's pretty easy to remember, because you can always say, okay, yeah, rock smashes scissors to a certain degree.
Well, and I never played rock or fighting type anyways, because they're not cute.
The only ones that threw me off were, for the longest time, I didn't realize that psychics were actually weak to bug.
Yeah.
Because bug had no good moves.
I actually saw...
And then when Jeremy actually explained it to me, with the exception of dark, it actually made sense, because all the other stuff actually still kind of made sense, because ghost, bug, and dark are super effective against psychics.
Basic human fears.
Exactly.
Yep.
But I didn't realize that at the time.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
it's kind of a mind blow, right?
When you actually realize it,
my epiphany totally just happened here.
So this game uses what at the time was a tired RPG mechanic, which is random encounters.
Still tired.
Yeah.
It's actually dead by this point, or should be.
But the way they make it better is that you can catch any of the opponents you find.
Not even that. Random encounters in this game are mostly opt-in. You only encounter random encounters on the overworld when you're in tall grass, which is clearly visible.
Or in caves.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Swarms of Zubats.
Before we get to caves, I want to talk about how good tall grass is as a concept, because it adds a tension that just isn't there in like a Final Fantasy where you have random encounters anywhere on the world
like
map.
Always,
because
constantly.
you can try to avoid grass if you don't want to fight. When you start walking in grass, you know, okay, now I have to be worried about an encounter, and it's a tension and release thing. Not that
a
random encounter is very tense, but
there's a thing over there in the corner, but there's grass, and I'm really not leveled enough to be here. Do I risk it?
See,
do I risk
and
it?
If you want to,
there's
take a shortcut.
Thing that people forget. That you can use cut to cut the tall grass if you just want to cut a path and have no encounter.
Yeah, but you're going to take 20 minutes to go through that?
Some people do.
What?
Yeah,
I didn't even know that.
We'll take out four squares of tall grass.
I played this game like 10 times and I never knew that.
And I think random encounters are kind of tired as a trope, but I think Pokemon should continue to use them because...
They're necessary in Pokemon.
Yeah, and Nintendo has said that a number of times, but... The thing about random encounters in this is, like we were saying at the start, you can catch what you randomly encounter. That's how you add members to your party in this game. You encounter them in the wild, and then the way capturing a Pokemon works in this is you have to hurt it a little bit. You can throw a Pokeball, and then there's a chance it'll join your team.
Status effects also help if you happen to, like, have sleep powder.
Yeah,
and like you said, since they're opt-in, they're much more healthy than, I'm not in a city, therefore I am constantly in danger. Get hurt, get knocked. Or get beat up a bit, and you can't really fight, avoid the tall grass as you make your way back to the Pokemon Center.
Usually the trade-off, though, if you really don't want to be in an encounter, is you either have to wander through the tall grass or be super antisocial and not talk to other trainers, because on eye contact, they'll try to out of you.
That's how real world works, right? That's why no one ever looks anybody in the eye?
Getting back to why random encounters are important, though, more powerful Pokemon you're less likely to encounter, which makes it really cool when you see something powerful and rare and adds an excitement. And you kind of have to weed through those 20 Caterpies to get the excitement of getting a Pikachu. And while it can be tedious, it's worth it for the payoff. Yeah.
Coincidentally,
especially when you check on something and find out the thing you capture are 1% rate to actually show up there.
I think I've explained Nuzlocke on the podcast before, but I think Cody and I both did a Nuzlocke run for this, or for the podcast. I caught a Pikachu in Viridian Forest. That was my one Pokemon. I'm happy about this.
And you probably know this, because who hasn't played Pokemon? But there are also trainer battles. They're the other major obstacle in the world, are other people with groups of Pokemon. If you walk in front of them, they will come after you. They tend to have higher leveled Pokemon than you're going to see in the wild, and you can't steal from them.
And really random catchphrases. I like wearing shorts in warm weather.
My
hey,
Rattata
that
is
kid
the
has
top
made it.
10% of Rattata.
Those kids have made it into every Pokemon game.
Yeah, the shorts kid is in every single Pokemon game.
And he always has an Ekans.
Totally making that up.
No,
I didn't remember that encounter.
Shorts are comfy and easy to wear.
Yep.
Joey will call you in later games and tell you how his Rattata is in the top 10% of all
One
Rattata.
Of the important things to remember between the difference, though, on top of what Jeremy just pointed out, you can't run from trainer battles, but you can run from just normal Pokemon. So get into a trouble into a trainer encounter, you can't run away from it, you're stuck with it until you've either lost, which you black out or white, I think the text is actually whited out for some reason, and you're kicked back to the Pokemon Center with what, you lose half your cash?
Yeah, you lose half your money. Pokemon Centers are actually pretty important. I didn't have them on the list as bullet points, but the way that you heal in this game is you go to a Pokemon Center, which is free public health care. Unlike most JRPGs at the time, which were still charging you a scaling amount of money to rest at a hotel.
That never really scaled with the actual amount of money you had.
The Pokemon Center is actually where you do everything. The only thing you don't do is buy stuff. Healing, trading, which is a mechanic we'll get to later, and switching out your team. So if you can only have a max of 6 with you at any time.
Yeah,
and
that actually kind of limits your offensive capabilities, because Pokemon can learn moves of types that they aren't. But they always have a single defensive type, so you kind of want to like build your team around what defensive types are good and what offensive moves they can learn. I mean, to some extent, I really like Jigglypuff. It's cute.
Well, so yeah, Tyler wants to build his team around what moves his Pokemon can learn. Alex builds her team around, I want to have some different types so that I'm not completely posed when I get into a certain trainer battle. But mostly I want the cute Pokemon that make me feel good.
I want to say in Platinum, actually, the first Elite Four guy is Bug-type, because it's like, I really like Bug-type. Screw everyone who says Bug-type's bad. he goes on like a bitch, but that's not the point.
Well, fortunately, the way the game is set up, because it's a level-based system, you can do that. You can have a team that is actually consistent of the worst Pokemon in the game. You could have five or six one level
as long as you're over-leveled.
Provided you have the levels, you can brute force anything.
So, we play Pokemon Pinball, and I want to touch this really quickly. It's really hard to catch different types of Pokemon in Pokemon Pinball games. And I think that everyone else in the Pokemon games is actually playing Pokemon Pinball, and that's why they have five Caterpies. And you're playing an actual Pokemon game.
Or the dudes that have Kakunas that only know Harden.
How? So, how did it forget Tackle?
So team building is a major part of the game, and it's a major part of the replayability of the game. Tyler and I usually like to go for like trying to figure out what the best team you can make at a time is. But there are other things to consider. Tyler and Cody both did Nuzlocke runs, which are basically ways to make the game different by shaking up what your team options are.
And by different, we mean, like, kind of hard? Because let's not beat around the bush. It's an easy game.
It implements a set of rules.
But I died to the Elite Four a lot.
Arbitrary challenge.
I say red, blue, yellow is actually really easy to do that, and we'll get there, but
fortunately, even if you wipe out, provided you get one kill on somebody else's Pokemon in the trainer battles, you'll gain the experience for that. So, I mean, even if it takes you forever, eventually you'll just overlevel against them and slowly, like I said, brute force your way through.
And while Pokemon games tend to be a little easy, this one is a little harder than later ones, but for the most part, you're fine just going, that one's cool and that one's cute and I like that one, and you'll be fine.
Well, that's the thing is, I really do pick my Pokemon just because I'm like, you make me happy. I don't have a damn clue what your stats are and I don't care, but you make me happy.
Katie was playing Platinum and went with Turtwig and stopped playing when it evolved.
But it really wasn't until the Elite Four that I had any problem. You know, I walked through the first four or five gym leaders and I'm just like, smash, smash, smash. And then they're kind of a difficulty cliff when you get to like the seventh gym leader and then the Elite Four.
Clearly
like,
you didn't start with Charmander.
Yeah,
why would I start with Charmander? Bulbasaur's way cuter.
Yeah, but Squirtle?
Actually, I probably did start with Squirtle. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think Squirtle is probably the cutest. Charmander is kind of devious and, like, he looks like a delinquent in this, and not a particularly
really
cute one.
Okay, but I watched the show. I knew what they all evolved into. I probably did end up going with the water type.
The problem with this game is, like, the end game scales terribly. Like,
let's wait on that for a while. So the basic overview of the game is your goal is to get 8 gym badges from 8 gym leaders in different cities. Beat up the mafia while you're at it.
Because a 10-year-old kid is better than the law in this town.
You're a prodigy.
Then
you only ever see one cop in this whole game.
I think there's at
least like two investigating the Diglett break-in.
Those are the only cops you see.
Yeah, those are the only ones, but you see two of them.
You see the guy who might be Looker on the SSN.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that guy.
But he's undercover and not currently policing. Then you have to beat the 4 best Pokemon trainers in a row, all the while your neighbor slash guy who clearly wants to be your friend but is socially awkward and kind of a jerk to you, and it's not until you're much older that you realized he just wasn't emotionally mature, and really he was trying.
smell you later, fart face.
Is constantly a thorn in your side because he's the only other good Pokemon trainer in the world.
Turns out he's actually good enough to become champion, and then you beat him, but, you know.
What a twist.
I'm the champion of the Pokemon League. No, you're not.
For like 5 minutes.
Yep. And now I'm here. Couldn't you have waited like a month? No.
So in addition to that, you're told at the beginning your goal is to capture every type of Pokemon.
It's impossible.
Well, sort of. But it still makes collecting them a pretty big, I don't want to say side quest even. It directly influences your main quest because that's what gives you your team options. It's a big part of the game is catching different Pokemon. You can certainly just catch a Rattata and a Jigglypuff and a Fearow at the start and win with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, nobody actually wants to catch a Caterpie.
Or a Weedle.
Butterfree kick ass.
Ash Ketchum had
about
a Butterfree. I wanted to be like Ash Ketchum.
Beedrills are badass.
Okay, Weedle?
Beedrill is awesome.
Oh, man, check it out. There's a Kakuna in this tree. Sweet.
Yeah, I'm not going to, like, I'm going to skip Kakuna.
It can wiggle.
It can harden, actually.
Mr. Mime? No one wants Mr. Mime.
If you just catch a Kakuna, all it knows is Harden.
Yeah, no, I know.
Or but, like Jinx. No one wants Jinx.
But like, I still kind of do want to catch those because every time you catch a Pokemon, you get a little short story about it. Basically,
that is
this like 2-sentence little thing about what it is, and it's real world building. And I'm actually really impressed. Some of the Pokedex entries are a little redundant, but I'm always excited to read the terrible science or cool mythology that comes with catching a new Pokemon.
Yeah,
even if it's this is a cocoon that has poison.
This is a bug. it's a bug. It does bug things. I'm like, you know, I just don't care.
But it's rather buggy.
But when you get a bunch of Pikachus together, they summon lightning bolts.
Yeah, which Pika, you have to remember, Pika, the target Pikachu. Audience for this game is like 8 to 12.
Yeah.
I was 8 to 12. I still didn't give a crap about the bugs.
A lot of them were pretty, but like, this is a rat. It chews things because it's a rat. Like, thanks, guys. Also, it's called Rattata.
This one didn't have any Pokemon based off of object. No, Voltorb and Magnemite. The electric types were based off of a Pokeball and a magnet.
And
then Pikachu.
Grimer and Muck were like toxic sewage.
Yeah, and that's like, true. Execute is just a bunch of eggs.
It's actually coconuts.
Oh, is this supposed to be coconuts?
Yeah, that's why it evolves into a palm tree.
But one of them's like...
Those are white eggs!
Yeah, one of them's got a cracked thing with a yolk spilling out.
It makes... I think they're supposed to be eggs. They're eggs, too, but they evolve into a palm tree with coconuts.
So I assumed it was an egg tree.
Okay, have none of you guys done coconut farming? Clearly, coconuts come from eggs.
Also, apparently. Executor uses egg bomb. Like, that's a move it learns.
Well, maybe there's a bird's nest up in the top of the tree.
It uses splash. So one other thing I want to talk about that is, I think, a kind of big step forward from other JRPGs. This was kind of starting to happen. Mother had done this years earlier, and Earthbound did it as well. There isn't a world map. You're always kind of traveling on the map, and I think that does a much better job of giving you a sense of place. Even though it makes the world smaller because it's not as abstract,
you would
feel like you're inhabiting a world.
The thing is, the world is smaller in size and scope generally, but it actually feels bigger because you're not jumping to a screen where your guy looks tiny. Like you said, you have a sense of place. You know, I am here, but here is going to be a while of a walk to get to there.
Oh my gosh, how long is Route 62? I've been walking for like
there
4 minutes.
There are so many oddishes. Jesus, guys, harvest these already.
Buy some repels, fool.
Jesus Christ, I'm stuck in this freaking cave and these Zubats won't leave me alone.
And you can't see a town map, which functions a lot like an overworld map, but you just, like, it looks like a real world map. You just fly between places.
Children nowadays don't understand the terror that is Zubat.
So, I was saying I'll take the Zubats over the freaking Geodudes any day because Zubats don't explode.
I sort of cut them off earlier. So this game also has dungeons, sort of. Most of them are caves or mafia hideouts. But the ones that are caves, the random encounters are always on, which makes them feel more dangerous and I sort of like as a design choice. But
they're also really
tedious.
Annoying.
If you've played modern Pokemon games, most of the routes have a pretty good variety of Pokemon, usually 6 to 10. There aren't that many Pokemon in this game, so they don't have that variety. So you have caves that are heavy on one Pokemon, and then they have two or three others for flavor.
This is the Zubat cave. Oh, it's look at Geodude.
There aren't nearly as many Zubats as I remember. It's just the first one is Zubat, so that is what sticks with people.
Well, I remember it's heavy Zubat early, and I think it's because they evolve at level 22. You stop seeing Zubat, you start seeing a little bit of Golbat, and they turn mostly into Graveler later.
Yeah, but a Golbat's just a Zubat. You don't really differentiate the two, because it's like, oh, a bat, and a bat with a giant mouth. Yeah.
Hey, he grows eyes.
Yeah, it does grow eyes.
Golbat grows eyes.
His mouth is so large, I didn't notice.
So, in order...
Looks demented in the art for this one.
He does.
So there are certain obstacles in your path that are sort of meant to keep you from going too far and keep the world from feeling too big so you don't get lost. In order to help it make you feel like your Pokemon aren't just there for cockfighting, the way you get through a lot of these obstacles is by using certain moves that are taught by what are called HMs. There are also TMs, which just teach your Pokemon moves, but HMs will teach them ones they can use in the environment that let them do things like cut down trees or push rocks or give you a lift.
Despite the fact that in a lot of these, if it was real...
You could
just
walk
climb
around
over them.
Oh, no. You are supposed to be like 10.
Yeah, but it's not that tall of a fence.
Why does
But I was a really rule-bound child.
I have a lizard that can breathe fire.
Why do I need to cut down the tree?
Yeah, why do I need to cut down the tree when I can just burn it?
You don't want to set the gym on fire, do you?
Yes.
You'll get thrown in prison.
We didn't
start.
Earn
the bad.
Back.
Who are they going to believe? The gangsters or the 10-year-old?
The one thing that I am disappointed about in the Pokemon series is they took the old man pervert out in front of Erica's gym. He is only in red and blue.
Oh, is he not in yellow?
He is not in yellow, and he is not in fire red or the other sapphire blue or whatever it is.
I'm okay with this. He is a bit of flavor.
The trainer that teaches you how to catch Pokemon is waiting for his morning coffee in the American version. In the Japanese version, he's drunk.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can't have alcohol in America.
There's like, what, six HMs in the first game?
Five.
And you need three of them.
You don't need cut much. Honestly, you can cut your way into the Vermilion Gym and then ditch it. I think you need it one other time in the game.
But you do need it to beat the game.
You do need it to beat the game, and you need it to get into Erica's gym.
So what they do is cut will cut down certain things on the map, tall grass or the
thorny bushes
that block your progress. Flash will light up the screen so you can see. This is only useful in
one rock tunnel.
Some tunnel.
It's just also useful tunnel. On the bottom level of Victory Road is dark.
No, am I wrong?
No, it's not. I played through it this morning.
But maybe I'm thinking of Gold and Silver.
You don't need it. You just can't see as well if you don't use it. Surf lets you go across
bodies of water,
which you need to do to get to Cinnabar.
Strength lets you move boulders.
And Fly lets you fly between Pokemon centers that you've already been to.
Which is more a convenience thing than anything.
For backtracking, usually to fill out your Pokedex or track down something that you might have missed. Usually, like, an item.
Fly is the one you can miss, since it's optional and it's kind of hidden
also
off in
Flash.
The corner. And Fly will actually let you skip the Seafoam Islands.
Yep.
Because you can fly back to Pallet Town and go south to Cinnabar.
But you don't really want to do through. That, because you'll miss out on a legendary Pokemon.
Yes.
Right, which most people just go back to later.
Before we move on to some of the problems with this game, one more major point about Pokemon is they evolve. It's Hydro Christians. Pokemon evolution is basically just them transforming to get stronger.
It's more like metamorphosis than it actually is an evolution. But they called it evolution, so that's what it is.
Most of them will just evolve by becoming stronger and leveling up. But there are a handful that require special elemental stones or to be traded to your friends.
Everyone loves Eevee because the options are...
The Eeveelutions! I love the Eeveelutions.
They can be
Flareon is terrible.
Yeah, Flareon's pretty terrible, which is
but
sad.
But I want a fire type on my team.
The original three, in all honesty, are pretty terrible.
So Jolteon's is Vulpix. Cool. Growlithe is only in red. Although Vulpix is in
blue. Growlithe is in blue.
No, other way around. Growlithe is red, Vulpix is blue.
Vulpix?
Nope. I thought we talked about it on the Monday.
Growlithe was...
You're still wrong.
Red.
Also, like, Ekans is blue and
Meowth... Ekans is red and Sandshrew is blue.
Okay,
I thought Meowth was blue.
It's Meowth Mankey.
Oddish, Bellsprout.
Pinsir, Scyther.
Yeah, let's just talk about...
Yeah, I was going to say kids.
Types now. I had it a little lower, but we can do it now. There are two different versions of the game. The only real differences are a handful of Pokemon, which we're naming now.
Additionally, there are some... Like, in order to complete your Pokedex, you have to find someone else who owns a different version of it. Or if you're an introvert, like most of us, you owned both versions.
And two Game Boys.
Yeah, and you had to physically... go up to someone, link cables, and trade them together. But there are also four Pokemon who only evolve via trade.
Those are Kadabra, Golem...
Graveler. Machoke into Machamp.
Oh, Machoke into Machamp. Yeah, I forgot about him. And who's the...
Haunter and
the
Gengar.
Haunter.
Duh. The one ghost type in this game.
And why would anybody want those Pokemon anyways?
Gengar and Machamp are sweet.
Yeah.
Machamp is actually not... bad, but
Machamp has four arms and a wrestling belt.
according to
Machamp's lore, he needs the belt, otherwise his muscles explode off his bones or something stupid like that.
Golem is, like, they're all really good Pokemon for themselves, but they're, with the exception of Alakazam and Gengar, like, they're not...
None of them.
Even Gengar is not that great in this game.
While we're talking about versions, I want to mention Pokemon Yellow, which came out a couple of years later, basically, they're like, we're working on Gold and Silver, we promise, don't kill us,
but
buy this.
But we need to keep printing money.
Became a trend until Platinum.
Yeah, Yellow capitalized on the anime.
Yeah, it did, but the reason they released it was they had pushed Gold and Silver back, like, four times.
And everybody wanted a Pikachu.
Yeah, Yellow is based on the anime a little bit. You start with a Pikachu, you can get all three starters.
He doesn't want to be in his Pokeball.
They made some tweaks to Pokemon. It's a little nicer of a game. Mostly stuff that would be implemented in Gold and Silver, like better move sets that they'd already decided on, got put in the Yellow.
Also, your Pikachu is badass and is the best Pikachu in any of the games.
He will follow you around.
Well, he also learns moves that Pikachu doesn't normally learn. Like Mega Kick. Not that great, but also Double Team.
But I think he learns Agility at a lower level.
Yeah, he does.
It starts a trend that, like I said, they don't stop until, I think, Platinum.
Yeah, basically a year later releasing a super-duper Game of the Year edition.
It's basically a combined version of both.
Yeah, so later they had gold, silver, and crystal, and then
ruby, sapphire, and emerald,
and then diamond, pearl, platinum. They never did gray, and that's kind of why I skipped black and white.
Black and white, they just decided to make black and white too.
And I didn't buy either of those either.
I wish they'd made Pokemon Z, because I would have bought it, but they didn't.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad they stopped the third game trend. On the other hand, the third game actually usually ended up being better than either of the other games because it like had a cooler story.
Well, the first two games are effectively live beta.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
In Emerald, it actually made sense to have the two factions going against each other, but that's neither here nor there for this podcast.
Yep. So a few problems this game has. One is inventory. You have 20 inventory slots to keep your healing items, your Pokeballs for catching Pokemon, your bike, your fishing rod.
The fossils
your technical moves.
Your various different
status
healing items. Your inventory fills up quick. And to be fair, we haven't really talked about this. It is a miracle Pokemon fits on a Game Boy cartridge.
Yeah.
So the limited inventory makes sense, but damn if it isn't inconvenient and at times irritating.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple times where I had to clear inventory space by utilizing items I probably would have saved. Granted, in a couple of cases, it was actually probably a good thing. Like, I have a tendency to have the gamer hoarding thing.
Yep.
So I ended up teaching a Pokemon a couple of moves I probably would have held on to, but he does well with them anyway, so it's not like, oh god, no, I've shot myself in the foot.
Yo, and the creator said the reason he limited Pokemon to four moves, part of it was technical, but he really liked the idea of you just teaching moves you liked to your Pokemon so they would be different from your friends. I don't think we're going to be able to get into the depths of Pokemon and how many ways two Pokemon of the same type and level can be completely different.
You could have an entire podcast specifically on that idea.
And it would go way nerdier than most of us want to listen
to. That
is
also
very
true. They also help combat the inventory issue a little bit by giving you a PC to offload stuff to. That's actually where all your Pokemon go if you already have six and you catch one.
Yeah, but it's still, like Jeremy said, it's annoying.
This game has a few of those JRPG, you have to talk to Bob so the prison guard will leave the bridge type things. It's a lot better than most of them, but Zach was said he was struggling with some stuff, so if you want to take the lead on this topic.
There were a couple of things that I was struggling with, like I couldn't remember how to get stuff, and it resulted in a lot of, I have to talk to everybody, and like I actually backtracked all the way to the first gym town and got kind of mixed up and had to re-backtrack all the way back down because I couldn't figure out or remember where the cave I had to go to progress was.
Yeah, to get to Lavender. Yeah, now that I think about it, I actually had a hard time
getting
the Rock Cave a couple
getting
times.
Getting to Lavender Town is kind of a pain in the ass because there is nothing that tells you how to do it.
I think the idea is people tell you to take Rock Tunnel. There's even a sign. Like,
right. There's nothing that tells you to get the to wake Snorlax up, you need the Pokeflute. There's nothing that tells you how to get the Pokeflute, and it gets super convoluted because to even get the item, you have to get a prior item from a completely different location.
Yeah, the self scope.
Yeah, the self scope isn't really. It's a little bit telegraphed because if you're in the Pokemon Tower and you talk to people, they're like, "Hey, I heard that in Celadon City they made this device to let you see ghosts." But yeah, you're right. There's definitely some stuff like that.
I mean, it's definitely better than some. I looked up.
It's not Phantasy Star.
No, it's not. God no. I had to look to find out where I got cut. I'll be honest, that wasn't necessarily a matter of I had to look up and find where it was. I was afraid I had missed it. Because there's such a long span before you actually get that HM.
Yep. Don't you remember the sensual back-rubbing scene, though?
One thing that I was curious...
Because
it actually lists that if you board the SSN or you get cut but leave the ship, it will leave. But it doesn't come back. Does it leave if you don't get cut?
No, it won't leave until you've talked to the captain.
And there's actually a glitch that if you know Surf, you can glitch your way onto the guy, surf onto him, and get back onto the SSN.
Also, you can just black out or white out on the SSN and it won't leave.
Yeah, I know. I knew that one, but I wasn't sure because if it could leave without it, but that's just a bug. No. I wasn't sure. I didn't think it was, but I didn't.
And even to get onto the SSN, you have to go find Bell, which is totally skippable if you don't know what you're doing.
And because the only indication that you have to run into your rival, basically, who says you should go talk to Bill. But he doesn't say, hey, where Bill is. And if you don't go in that direction.
Yeah, but if you don't go in that direction, you can't go very far in the other one before you're like, okay.
You have a very limited space to get lost in.
Yeah. like I said, it has a lot of those moments just sprinkled throughout. It's not nearly as bad, and some of it is maps, getting through some of the caves. It's not nearly as bad, but it does have them, and they are kind of annoying, especially when you're sitting on a tiny-ass inventory trying to get through something like that, and then finding out, I don't have the inventory space for this.
Gold and Silver did a pretty good job fixing a lot of the guide-dated moments.
And then, Tyler, you wanted to talk about the end game.
Yeah, so my biggest problem is that it's pretty easy to waltz through all 8 gym leaders, and then you get to the Elite Four, and Lorelei's like, she's like 10 levels higher than me.
I actually think Lorelei is the hardest member of the Elite Four. She was the only one to KO any of my Pokemon.
Yeah, actually, the first Nuzlocke run I did, I'm like, nah, I got this. Go Vileplume. And she's like, Ice Punch. So she's like 10 levels higher than you. Your rival can also be kind of a problem. And then you go on, I'm like, okay, that wasn't too bad. As long as they're all about that level, I should be fine. And then they actually start getting gradually stronger. Like, Bruno's kind of a chump because he uses Fighting-type Pokemon. That's a bad choice in first gen. Bad job, Bruno. Then you go and fight Agatha. She's like Poison and Ghost, I guess. She has like too many Haunters. It's not really much of a problem. And then you get to Lance, and he's like, guess what? I got Dragonites coming out my ass.
Seems uncomfortable.
It does. They're kind of large.
I remember spending so much time. I fought the Elite Four probably 2 or 3 times before I'm like, wow, I'm just not even like close to capable of this, and went trying to grind. And I think this is another bullet point on our list, which is trying to grind. You can go and earn, you know, a few dozen experience points at a time if you're fighting wild Pokemon, or else you can earn a fairly decent number fighting trainers, but the trainers are one-time events. So if you've gone and found all of the obvious trainers, there's not really a good way for you to advance a little bit to get over the hump of the Elite Four kicking my teeth in.
Well, later on in the game, the only way to do that is to
fight the Elite Four.
Fight the Elite Four over and over and over and KO, you know, gradually build up more and more KOs on their Pokemon, or grind the ever-living hell out of a victory road.
Which is just tedious and obnoxious, and I say this as somebody who played dozens of hours of Pokemon and loved this game.
Grinding is always obnoxious. It doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah,
there's some games I like it in.
But for the most part, Pokemon is a very friendly RPG, and I think that's why it took off. But we haven't played Dragon Quest yet, and we really need to, just for comparison's sake, because the creator of Dragon Quest wanted it to be like climbing a mountain. It would be a lot of hard work, and no, it wouldn't be that fun, but at the top, you would be greeted with a beautiful sunset. And the one time Pokemon veers into that is with the Elite Four. It's very friendly up until that point, and now it's like, climb the mountain, bitch.
Yeah, I gotta say, that sounds like a really ethos for a game. This is gonna suck, but the end's gonna be party.
See, but when you're
especially a game that looks as bad as Dragon
Quest.
No,
it is the journey, not the destination.
No, it's the fucking journey.
But when you're a 9-year-old who can only buy one game a year, a super long game like that is kind of nice. But I think it is ultimately a flaw. Especially in Pokemon, there's a mood whiplash problem of the game hasn't been like that.
It's just a brick wall out of nowhere.
I like my teeth. I'd prefer it if the Elite Four didn't kick them in.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem. Like, that's kind of at the point where it starts encouraging, like, hey, maybe you should consider building a balanced team. Your rival's been telling you about that. But if you just went with the Pokemon you actually like, like, the Elite Four is probably going to wreck them because you have to fight, like, 5 gym leaders in a row, basically.
As a kid, I had the Elite Four kick my teeth in so badly. These are all just dentures that I've got now.
Yeah, I was super proud this run-through. I didn't have to do any Elite Four grinding. And I was like, yes, I have conquered this game. Nidoking, you were useless.
Really? Nidoking was useless?
Nidoking just stopped being useful after Koga. Huh.
Yeah. I feel like Earthquake is always useful.
But yeah, so did I, and that's why I had him, but, like, it was just redundant, and he was super useful for absorbing thunder waves, but
that's about it.
Yeah.
Huh.
But anyway, one last thing I want to talk about is legendary Pokemon, which are Pokemon you only have one chance to catch. There are 4 of them in this game. One of them is only available after you beat the Elite Four. They're very difficult to catch, but fairly powerful. The problem with them in this game is they're good stat-wise, but lame move pool wise.
That's because everything in this game has a crappy moveset.
Zapdos learns Thunderbolt.
Oh, Zapdos is amazing.
And Articuno learns Ice Beam.
I used Articuno to beat Lance. I actually used it on my team.
They're the only Pokemon that actually learn Thunderbolt and Ice Beam. And the reason Moltres sucks is because Fire doesn't get anything it's actually good for until Gen X and Y.
It's good for
good
taking out Lorelei's Jinx.
Yeah.
Which is actually a kind of a roadblock, but anything else we want to say about Pokemon? Because we're going kind of long, and
it's fantastic as a game, and it's a marvel it got made at all. But there's so much things got added into games that followed this one. Play a later gen game, unless you're a significant fan of the Pokemon series and want to know how the game started.
Well, even as a starting game, you say that about a lot of games, and a lot of games, I'd argue, skip the first gen. I'm not sure Pokemon is one that I actually argue skip the first gen.
It's still pretty damn good.
It's more that I argue go back to the first gen later and see what you missed. Because, yeah, there is a huge, huge amount that's added to the later gens that just makes it much more pleasant, even though the first gen is really pretty good.
Yeah, like, this podcast is largely about video game history, and this is a textbook we're studying.
I think this has a little bit of the Watchmen problem, where Watchmen is a fantastic comic that ruined comics. I think Pokemon and Final Fantasy VII teamed up to make sure JRPGs would suck after that. But Zach was talking about features in new games, and in particular the like experience bar in this game. I thought I was going to miss that so much since it's not in the first gen. But going back to it, this game held up way better than I expected it to.
I genuinely
had a good time the entire time I was playing.
I missed the indicator that you had caught a Pokemon before.
Oh, yeah.
And the ability to sort through my PC.
Yeah.
More PC than I missed sorting. That experience bar.
Also,
having to change boxes.
Yeah. And the art is kind of... Oh, yeah. I forgot that you have to change a box if it's full. Otherwise, you don't get to catch a Pokemon. That's terrible. Yeah, so your box can only hold 20 Pokemon. Later gens, if you catch a Pokemon and your box is full, it just puts it in the next box. And this, you can't throw the Pokeball.
That's odd. That's horrifying.
It is.
I'm sitting here gaping.
Also, the art, especially for Pokemon that are on your team, is not great.
It's not, but I honestly find it really charming.
This is my Bulbasaur's butt.
Machoke with the derp face.
To be fair, like this... Pokemon is such a marketing force. It's been so like streamlined and like I actually really enjoyed seeing this sort of rawer Pokemon.
It's taken 20 years for Snorlax to get up.
I love that gif.
I like the idea of going back and looking at it, but it made me appreciate X and Y so much more because fewer instances of dead zones and nothing going on. And
I never thought that I would miss the running shoes from the later generation. Right?
Just
the basic ability to run around and cover ground so much faster.
There's the summary. It's still a really solid game, especially first generation, but the later ones have added some really, really powerful, pleasant changes.
If you're looking for a glimpse into history, this is a great game to play. If you're looking for a game to just play and kill some time, a later gen one would probably be a better option.
Probably. Gold or silver.
X or Y, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's what I was in.
Pokemon Gold is my favorite game of all time. Silver's, but if I'm going to recommend a game, X or Y.
My problem with X and Y is after you've beaten their equivalent of the Elite Four, there's nothing to do.
Yeah, Platinum has a much better fair. After the Elite or post game.
Because so at least
want
Gold
and Silver's back.
You get to go do Soul Kanto Silver. Again.
Yeah.
It's a DS game.
Yeah, because a wizard named Iwata was like, oh, hey, guys, by the way, I added the first game into this one. Mic drop. You're welcome for that. It took 10 years off my life. I'm going to die in the middle of being the president of Nintendo, but you're welcome.
I think I looked at that and it was like 40.
The thing that I don't like about X and Y that I really was surprised that I missed, that I fondly remember in this one, is the damn Safari Zone.
Yeah, even the Safari Zone, I was like expecting to dread, but I just caught Pokemon. It was cool.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good.
So, we ready to move on to rankings?
Yes. On our website at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, we have a list of all the video games we've played for our podcast, ranked from best to worst. The best is Chrono Trigger. These guys think it'll last, so it probably will. The worst is Golden Axe. Alex likes it. She's still here.
Hey, I
still
like
wrong,
it too.
Apparently.
Yeah, we're not keeping you around very much longer, I don't think, because of that opinion.
Exciting Bikes are still in the middle, but they won't be next week. All right, so Zach said he did not think this game would break top 25, so let's start there. Game number 25 on our list, Mega Man. Another franchise starter and a big, long-running franchise.
The original Mega Man?
The original Mega Man.
I'd have to give it a Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon is so much better than
the original Mega Man.
So about halfway up the list is Link's Awakening, the highest-rated Game Boy game we have on here. And while I love Link's Awakening, I think Pokemon is better. It's more impressive. It's got a lasting legacy. I guess Link's Awakening kind of does, but it's just another entry in that franchise.
Yeah, but Link's Awakening is really just in the shadow of Ocarina.
Or, like, Link to the Past.
Yeah, I'd say Link to the Past. But Link's Awakening has that sweet love subplot that Tyler and I pine after.
Well, I guess it's got a plot, which Pokemon really kind of doesn't have.
Tentacles.
Tentacles? What tentacles?
So I will vote above. You
oh,
guys?
Yeah.
No, I think I agree.
All right. We'll skip Star Fox 64 from last week and go up to the next RPG on here, which is Final Fantasy VI.
Ooh.
I don't think Pokemon is as good as 6.
I kind of agree with that. Like, I think Pokemon had a lot of good ideas, but 6 is a damn good
six
game.
6 is a stonewall. It's not going to beat 6.
Okay. I'm surprised, but Pokemon will not crack our top 10.
It's good, but again, it's bogged. There's too much stuff.
Let's
wrong
compare
with
it to last week's entrant, Star Fox 64.
Oof.
You have a full meal against an appetizer.
Well, the thing of it is, this is one I can actually vote, and I really just think that the depth of gameplay in Pokemon really is what clinches it, because Star Fox has a lot of replayability, but not necessarily a whole lot more.
Arguably, Pokemon has a lot of replayability. Like, honestly, that's exactly the argument I was going to make.
Yeah, because, like, you've made a mention before of going through with the express intent of using Pokemon you haven't actually used before and seeing if you can make something out of it.
Arbok!
It doesn't have the same kind of mastery elements as Star Fox does, but there is a good deal of depth and shared replayability. You probably wouldn't replay Pokemon immediately after completing it like you might with Star Fox, but that's because you're committing 20 hours against a half hour.
But Pokemon's a 20-year-old game, and Tyler literally just replayed it.
And so is Star Fox 64. Yeah. It's 19 years old, but...
But, you know, Star Fox 64, you'll replay for 15, 20 minutes at a time, a run. Yeah. Pokemon, you literally do 15 or 20 hours.
I think that's actually where Pokemon's lack of story comes in handy. Because you don't mind replaying it because the story, like, it can just ignore the plot. Like, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so one of those comparisons none of us want to make, but we have to. Deciding where it goes, is Pokemon better or worse than Super Mario 3?
On an execution scale, I'd have to give it to Mario. I will have to ponder this for a second, though, because that's not really the only thing I want to weigh.
I think Pokemon is better. Mario 3 is a fantastic game. Contender for the best in that franchise. Obviously, we have Super Mario World above it, and I will stand by that, but it is a fantastic Mario game. But it's the third shot. This is the first Pokemon game, and while it's missing features, Pokemon Gold doesn't feel like it completed something that was half done. It felt like it added a luxury cruise to a battle cruiser. I think I like Pokemon more than Mario 3.
There's certainly more game to be had in Pokemon. The concept is just so good. A JRPG where you catch your teammates.
It inspired so many imitators, none of which did as well.
I like Super Mario 3, and that's not something I say about a lot of platformers. But despite all the problems that I think Pokemon has, I think it's better than Super Mario 3.
Tyler, you want to say anything to try to sway us? Because that's...
Yeah,
I mean, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, but it is a hard comparison.
The amount of, I guess, effort I can invest is much higher in Mario, and that matters a lot more to me. That said, I probably spent more time playing Red and Blue than I played Super Mario 3. Like, Super Mario 3 is a done game to me. Like, I figured it out. It's done. But Pokemon has, like, it's like trying to compare, like, a well-prepared souffle to, like, really awesome kettle chips. Like, I can eat more kettle chips than I can eat of souffle.
It's wings against the steak.
Yeah. And I think in this terrible analogy, wings win. Even though I actually hate chicken wings, but...
Wait, which one's wings?
Pokemon.
Okay.
I was thinking Pokemon was my steak because it takes longer to make.
My personal vote is for Mario 3, but I really can't make, like, a more objective argument that is capable of swaying anyone, so...
All right.
It has to be Pokemon.
So Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow will go above Super Mario Bros. 3 and below Final Fantasy 6 at number 12.
What?
Yeah.
What do we have above it? Because, like, those have got
Halo, Final Fantasy, Metroid.
Here, let me count down. Final Fantasy 6, Fire Emblem.
Okay.
Link to the Past, Super Mario World, Mega Man X, Doom, Castlevania, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, Halo, Super Metroid, and Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, and honestly, I would argue to keep any of those above Pokemon. Except maybe Doom, but, like...
Doom is fantastic.
It is a good game.
I'm kind of upset that the new Doom is just Doom.
Doom, Doom, Doom.
Because, I'm sorry, I don't care what you think your game is. You do not compare to the original Doom.
All right.
Yeah, Doom 2 couldn't hold a candle to it, so...
I think we're all tired out after that podcast, but, in a good way. It was good for all of us, right?
I need a cigarette.
Any final thoughts on Pokemon besides please, Nintendo, put gold and silver on the virtual console just so we can do them. I guarantee you they will get on top of the list. I control the list.
It's good.
Yeah, it's a pretty, well, obviously, it's a pretty damn good game. It's worth playing, but if you don't really care about video game history, play any successor.
All right. With that, we are going to let the guy who emailed us last week, Ryan, pick our next game, and we are going to play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. The only version available is the HD version on Steam, which is kind of a combination of Tony Hawk 1 and 2, but 2 is the good one anyway, so
we'll see how this
works.
Should
be fine. Next time on Last Time...
Indie Nosebleed!
I'm going to break a leg, I think.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2016. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. Past episodes and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us by email at ltobg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review. Podcast over. You have to go to the start screen and load your last save again.
God damn it. I have a really good joke and the word didn't work. It's not alimony. Is alimony what you pay?
Yeah.
Child support. Child support was
alimony. Alimony is divorce.
Ugh.
Yeah, alimony's like child support, but for your wife.
I abandoned the joke. I didn't make it.